From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. According to the Quad Cities Chamber, John Deere is the top employer in the region. Some 8,000 people work for Deere & Company. Beyond paying all those salaries, the company has a huge cultural presence on both sides of the Mississippi. There's the John Deere Pavilion in downtown Moline, the John Deere Classic golf tournament was just held in Silvis, Illinois, and you can find its tractor and engine museum in Waterloo, Iowa. But since last September, the company has laid off nearly 1,000 of its workers across Iowa and Illinois. We asked Deere for a statement on this, and they said in part, as the largest global manufacturer of agricultural equipment, John Deere, like many others in the industry, currently faces significant economic challenges, including rising global operational and manufacturing costs and reduced demand. To better position Deere to meet future demand, we've taken proactive steps to reduce production and inventory and optimize manufacturing throughout the U.S. and abroad. As stated in our second quarter earnings call, industry sales are expected to further decline in the back half of FY24. John Deere is steadfast in its commitment to U.S.-based manufacturing. The statement goes on, but you get the idea. Joining us now to better understand what's happening is Peter Orizem, Professor Emeritus of Economics at Iowa State University. Peter, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for taking the time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can join the conversation today by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. What do you want to know about John Deere? Or maybe you or someone in your family or friend circle has been affected by these layoffs. We'd love to hear your story at 800-222-9455. 9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Peter, as you understand it, what's really behind these layoffs at Deere?
Well, John Deere has three major lines of operation: agricultural implements, the tractors and combines and the things that we see out in the fields. That's about half of their business. And about a quarter of their business is construction equipment and forestry equipment. And about a quarter are the what I call the retail side, the lawn mowers, and things along those lines. All three areas have faced declining sales recently, but agriculture, which is the bulk of their revenues, has faced the sharpest decline in sales.
So it's declining in sales. Do we understand, or what do we understand about why people are not buying combines and tractors and other farm implements?
Well, I mean, one of the underlying things is John Deere builds very large and expensive items, and a lot of people will use credit to purchase those items, and the cost of credit has increased.
And this is rising interest rates, right? The same reason that it costs more to buy a home right now is the reason it would cost a farmer more to finance a tractor, for example.
Right. And so in some ways, John Deere is more exposed to those interest rate expenses than other manufacturers, simply because the things that they sell are so expensive. But also, agriculture, the U.S. Department of Agriculture projects that farm incomes are going to be down 25% in 2024. And that means that a lot of farmers are not going to be buying new equipment. And so that certainly is going to have an impact on the demand for what John Deere produces.
What's driving farm incomes down this year?
Well, farm prices, corn and soybeans, but across the board, almost all commodities have faced declining prices. Some of that is from, relatively historic highs. So the prices aren't necessarily poor relative to a longer term projection, but relative to the more recent experience where farm incomes were quite strong, the decline in prices, particularly for corn and soybeans, but also for some of the livestock areas, those are certainly affecting incomes here in the Midwest.
I want to talk about another factor or potential factor here, and that was a massive month-long strike back in 2021. We talked about it here on the show. It's between the United Auto Workers and John Deere. Do you think that did that have any effect, you know, that potentially connects with the layoffs we're seeing these days?
Well, certainly the cost of labor increased for John Deere, but it increased for all of their competitors as well. And remember that we were experiencing relatively rapid wage growth across the board early on in the pandemic because it was so hard for firms to find workers, John Deere included. John Deere was at one time saying that they were having trouble filling all the vacancies that they had. And so while the strike probably increased the rate of wage growth somewhat, it's not necessarily out of line with what other firms at the time, particularly in the union sector, particularly in large durable goods manufacturing such as automobiles, who are also facing upward pressure in prices and strike activity.
I was looking through, in preparation for this conversation, some of the comprehensive annual financial reports of some of the Quad Cities, which is really Quint Cities, as we've talked about on the show before. This is a major employer, right? City of Moline, 1,600 workers for Deere and Company. City of East Moline, 1,300. And I believe it's in one of the Iowa towns had a number of Deere employees as well. Talk about the effect that this has in the region. And I don't know if Iowa or Illinois will be more affected or both or how you see it shaking out.
Well, both. I mean, manufacturing in Illinois is sort of flat coming out of the pandemic. So employment overall in the sector of manufacturing is roughly where it was before the pandemic hit. In Iowa, it had actually grown. And one of the areas of growth for the state of Iowa as a whole was in durable goods and non-durable goods manufacturing. So clearly, losing jobs at John Deere is going to put a halt on that growth. But also, John Deere is a major purchaser of inputs. They have about 4,400 suppliers, and that's going to include people who are producing parts, people who are producing tires. So in Des Moines, the tire manufacturer Bridgestone is laying off a couple hundred workers, or roughly 20% of their labor force, because of the decline in the demand for their products. So when John Deere catches a cold, it's a virus for a lot of their suppliers.
What will these layoffs do to the local economies in the region?
Well, the Quad Cities have had a slower time coming out of the pandemic than some of the other communities in Illinois and Iowa. So their overall employment was still 2 to 3% below where it was before the pandemic hit. Clearly, losing about 1% of John Deere, when John Deere is such a large fraction of the local economy, is going to be an impediment to coming out of the pandemic recovery in the Quad Cities. And it's going to also have an impact, the layoffs in Dubuque and Ankeny and Waterloo here in Iowa. And there's just no way to sugarcoat that. They pay well, and they're a big part of the labor force. And at a time where jobs for people with, say, high school or perhaps a little bit of post-high school education, those jobs are fewer and harder to come by. The types of salaries that you lose when John Deere lays off, those sorts of jobs aren't in ready supply. So there's not a lot of things that people can move to that are going to pay as well as what they were earning at John Deere.
Let me take a moment to remind people, if you're just joining us, this is the 21st show. We're talking with Peter Orizem, Emeritus Professor of Economics at Iowa State University, about the recent layoffs at Deere and Company, which is headquartered in Moline, Illinois, in the Quad Cities. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. That's 800-222-9455. Do you see this as a temporary set of layoffs, or is there some more of a sort of secular decline going on here?
Well, I think it's temporary in the sense that a year ago, John Deere was having trouble filling positions, although there were projections that 2024 was going to be a tough year in terms of agricultural incomes, and hence the demand for John Deere products. It was interesting that last year, even as John Deere was announcing relatively strong net incomes for 2023, they were also projecting declines in 2024. So they were already looking ahead and seeing some problems. And one of the problems was 2023 had huge bumper crops in corn and soybeans. And so you had a lot of grain that was in storage, and that's helping to depress the prices in 2024. And then also just the difficulty of world trade. So the pandemic cut down world trade, but also the tariffs have tended to hinder world trade. And if you're in the business of feeding the world, it doesn't help much when you have impediments to international trade, which is how we have managed to dissipate very large production in the past.
Yeah. I want to come back to the trade question maybe after a break in a few minutes here, but sticking with Deere for now, I also wanted to ask about, we've talked on the show about the sort of right to repair movement. John Deere has been a focus of a lot of people who are unhappy with the lack of right to repair modern technology. Apple devices are maybe one that's even more common that people have in their pockets. Very difficult to, you know, replace a battery in that, for example. But we've heard from farmers who say, you know, they want to do more to be able to modify the software or equipment from Deere, and it's really becoming difficult. And a couple of years ago, Deere announced it was even looking to shift to more of a recurring revenue model. Can you remind us what that would entail and how much they've been able to move down that path yet?
Well, Deere was thinking of moving toward more of a lease model because, you know, the cost of their products were so high. And, you know, the average farmer doesn't have $1 million in loose change in order to pay for a new combine. And so they were thinking of more of a lease model where John Deere would also be perhaps responsible for all of the maintenance and repair for that equipment, which is not what sort of a more historical view of how farmers take care of their equipment has been. And so, you know, certainly there are lease models that are common in the automobile industry, and there are reasons why that makes sense for a product that's now as technologically complex as a John Deere tractor or a John Deere combine. I mean, you know, they have heavy investments in information technologies, and they're much more complicated to maintain. On the other hand, if you have a down year in terms of farm income, farmers are going to want to hang on to equipment longer and make their repairs themselves. So you may find that aftermarket manufacturers of repair parts for John Deere and some of the other farm implement manufacturers, they're actually going to have a relatively good year because farmers are going to be trying to get additional years out of their current equipment.
So, all right, we need to take a break in a couple of minutes, but do you think has that shifted demand away from Deere at all to other makers of this equipment, or do they just have such a dominant position in the market these days? I mean, I can still remember, you know, a decade or two ago at the state fair, or maybe it's even in a country song. I may be conflating things here. You know, are you red or are you team green, right? People talk about those things. Do you see shifting demand at all, or is this a broader story and Deere's just kind of been the poster child for that?
Well, there are fewer competitors for John Deere. I don't think that this is going to mean a shift away from John Deere, but it may be that people are looking, particularly in down years in farm income, it's fairly common for people to hang on to their equipment longer. And then during upturns, if you're looking, I mean, it wasn't that long ago during the pandemic, the price of used John Deere equipment also went up because production was challenged. But in many years, the difference between a used John Deere and a new John Deere is fairly substantial. So if you want to get into the business, you find used equipment during good years because people are upgrading their equipment.
All right, we are going to take a break. We'll continue our conversation with economist from Iowa State University, Peter Orizem. We're talking about the layoffs at Deere and Company, which is headquartered in Moline, Illinois, in the Quad Cities. We're also going to talk a little more about tariffs and trade wars and how that could affect, especially the agricultural economy here in Illinois and the Midwest in the years ahead. Possibly very different paths depending on who is elected president this fall. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking with Peter Orizem, Emeritus Professor of Economics at Iowa State, about the recent layoffs at John Deere, which is headquartered in the Quad Cities here in Illinois. You can join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right. You mentioned before the break that trade wars as a reason why commodity pricing was so low. President Biden has kept some of the Trump administration's tariffs in place. Former President Trump has said he'd impose a universal tariff on imports. I wonder how you think that might affect farmers in the Midwest and the regional economy more broadly.
Well, farmers in the Midwest have benefited tremendously from the expansion of trade, particularly with expanding parts of the world. So, China was a massively growing market for U.S. corn, soybeans, and pork, and so then having a trade war with China does not help matters. When you do have a very large crop, it's useful to be able to sell that worldwide rather than to sit on it, because if you have to sit on it, then it depresses the prices in the subsequent year, which is what we're experiencing now. And so I think in general, for the Midwest, it would be useful to have a return to freer trade worldwide, and certainly a broader market for U.S. commodities.
You know, it's an interesting dichotomy, right? Because we have seen this sort of backlash politically against more expansionist free trade ideas that we had, say, in the 1990s. And I think, you know, people who maybe remember their family members working for the Maytag factory in Galesburg, which I think moved production down to Mexico, you know, might not, or they sort of, that's one of the reasons that we've heard more of this anti-free trade rhetoric these days. How do you balance those, or how do you think about that balance between, you know, the potential liabilities for people in manufacturing, where, you know, outsourcing can take jobs away, versus the benefits for people in farming, as another example?
Well, it's very easy to say that on average people benefit because not everybody is average, right? So there are always going to be winners and losers from any disruption in the marketplace. I think most of the analysis on sort of the more protective tariffs that were imposed in the Trump administration and then continued under the Biden administration, that the benefits haven't been all that great. And that ultimately they've led to inflation and higher consumer prices. So I think generally it would have been a lot easier for us to come out of the pandemic with less inflation if we had had or maintained a freer international trade. But those sorts of issues are always there. There's going to be political repercussions, but also economic repercussions anytime that you either expand or contract a market. You have to allocate more resources to the things that you're relatively good at, and fewer resources from things that you're not as strong at, or that maybe your trade partners are better able to produce. And one of the things the U.S. is atypically good at is agricultural production. So the sorts of sectors of the economy that we're atypically good at are the ones that are going to be benefiting from freer trade.
I want to move to a couple of other topics in the time we have remaining, and it feels like it was just not that long ago. Maybe it was a few years at this point. We were talking about low water on rivers and impairing barge traffic and how that would affect farmers. And now we're talking about flooding this year in Iowa. I guess that's how these cycles go. There was a story I saw within the last week or so that talked about runoff polluting potentially drinking water sources. The phrase fecal soup was used. I wonder how you see that affecting the ag industry this year.
Well, I mean, obviously, if you don't have enough water in the Mississippi and barges aren't able to go to full capacity, which is what happened last summer, then that just increases the price of transportation and raises the cost of engaging in trade. And so obviously, having higher water is beneficial to the farmers indirectly, because if I'm Cargill and I'm buying grain and I have to also factor in the cost of shipping to the port in New Orleans in order to send the grain out to customers in other countries, I have to factor that cost of shipping in terms of what I'm able to pay for the product. So that's a positive for farmers when the cost of transportation goes down. I should say that one of the things that you haven't asked was John Deere shifting some of its production to Mexico. One of the things that they can't shift are the very heavy items, because the cost of transportation is so high. And so at some point, they're going to want to be producing the biggest equipment in the Midwest, because that's where their customer base is. And they're not going to be wanting to ship very large and expensive equipment from Mexico to Iowa and Illinois.
I guess that's maybe, what would you say, job proofs it a little bit more than a washing machine, maybe?
Well, it's once again one of the reasons you have an advantage is location. And so there are reasons why we produce large agricultural equipment in close proximity to the customer.
Fair point, fair point. One of the other topics that has been on the mind of people who follow farming issues, and maybe even people who don't follow them that closely, is the Farm Bill. There's been an extension. So one expired last year. There was, after a lot of back and forth, there was an extension of the old Farm Bill through September, but we're still seem to be pretty far off from a new 5-year Farm Bill. Do you see that having potential downstream effects on the ag industry?
Well, I'm pretty sure that they're going to continue to do 1-year extensions of the previous farm bill. And I don't know how you get anything passed in Washington these days, but I guess the clearest answer is you don't. And so I think the one thing that they've been successful at having bipartisan support in Washington is extending the last thing that they passed. And so I suspect that we may have more than 1 year of extensions on the farm bill. I don't think they're going to pass it this year either.
You think it's just 1 year extensions all the way down from here on out?
Well, I don't know. I'm 68. I'm sure they'll pass one before I die, but well, let's hope so. For both my longevity and for farmers. But I think it's been extremely difficult to get things through Washington, and but certainly in an election year, no one has an incentive to compromise. And so I think you're more likely to see a farm bill coming out of whoever is in charge coming out of the election.
Interesting. I just heard somebody else talking on a different podcast in a different context within the last few days about how there really hasn't been a normal federal budgeting process since arguably 2007 or 2008.
That is certainly the case.
Yeah.
Continuing resolutions, emergency extensions to avoid government shutdowns and things seem like they're much more common now than what was true in the past. So hopefully, at some point, we'll be returning to the age of civility.
Yeah, well, hopefully that pendulum will swing back someday. All right, Peter Orazem is an emeritus professor of economics at Iowa State University. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today. Appreciate it.
Well, it's an honor to be on your show. Thank you.